Welcome, Cola. When you are done with the aircon, Cola, welcome. I was just waiting for you to come before we start the meeting. I couldn't start without you.
The plane wasn't happy leaving Durban this morning.
Yes. So let's hope the regulator will be able to regulate the air.
Doing it. Usually I can fix it. Sure. Usually I can fix it.
I would like to welcome everyone once again. Inez, welcome back. I felt lonely here. I'm told Inez survived fumigation on the floor. That made her very ill when whoever was fumigating the floor. Welcome back.
Oh
my Kopani, I've also not seen you for a long time.
That
welcome back.
Fumigating.
All is forgiven. good folks, Honorable Deputy Minister, Director General, officials from the department, we are in your able hands. We can commence as soon as you are ready. Yes, ma'am.
Sir, you know what? The report that you got before us is a PowerPoint presentation. So it doesn't have the matter. There is no information. No. I think PowerPoint is for somebody who will be presenting. So, but we, the guys, I think we need to be given more information in future. Please, sir.
Thanks, for the comment, Mekopan, there's, okay, Director General, let me not speak for you.
Thank you, sir. I accept that. There were also annexures that were sent to the PowerPoint, unless something went wrong with it. A3 thing that summarizes the origin of what is in the PowerPoint presentation. However, in future we'll do probably a web document with much more explanatory.
If I understand the Honorable Koban correctly, there's a request for a brief overview narrative.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Thank you very much. Great. I will
is that correct? Thank you. Shall we commence?
Thank you, sir. Thank you to the honorable members. We have a PowerPoint presentation that deals with broadly three areas. The first one is the performance information that relates to DPW, and then the PMTE, and then the financial information that covers everything. The first part will be done by my DDG for governance, risk, and compliance. Mr. Faisal, can you indicate yourself? She will be doing that presentation, that part of the presentation. Then the head of PMTE, Mr. Sirote, will then deal with the PMTE. And then the finance information will be dealt with by the CFO. Then I will lead the responses and the further explanatory explanations at the end of the presentation. So I will then the other members, for the interest of time, Chair, will simply introduce themselves when they are responding to issues, as I will direct them during the course of the discussion, if I require them.
I think perhaps it might be expeditious just to do a round of introductions of all the officials here. Then we at least know, even if they don't get the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. I'll start with myself. I'm Zihonga Shabantu, the Director General of the Department of Public Works.
MTS Faisal, DDG Governance Risk and Compliance. Also Rote, Head of the PMTE.
Good morning, Honourable Members. Stan Anderson, DDG of the EPWP.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. The name is Clive Mchisa, DDG Corporate Services.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Mandy Safakela Lindi. I'm the Acting DDG Policy.
Good morning, it's Fatima Chowin, Head of STM.
Good morning, it's Swansi Matthews, DDG for the Immovable Asset Register.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Lwazi Mashlangu, Performance Monitor and Evaluation.
My name is Cox McCord, I'm the Chief Finance Officer.
Chair and Members,
good morning, Chair.
Thank you very much. You may proceed, unless you are looking for another missing member.
I was just checking if they are. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, Honourable Members, Chairperson. The report on quarter two performance for the 2016-17 financial year is presented in the context of the second phase of our turnaround, which is efficiency enhancement, the stage during which we have an established asset register, we're setting up IT systems as well as developing our service delivery model and the business processes within the department. Chairperson, Honourable Members, to contextualize the structure of the department, we have on the left of the slide the DPW and on the right PMTE. DPW is made up of the Extended Public Works Program, the Property and Construction Industry Policy Branch, and Prestige Management. And PMT on the right, Real Estate and Investment Services, Construction, Real Estate Management, Real Estate Information and Registry and Facilities Management. In the center, we have a shared services function. So what you have in the department, finance and supply chain management, as well as corporate services, governance, risk and compliance, shared services in the department which support both the main boat as well as the PMTE. We have categorized the level of performance at core level for the purpose of presentation. We have the items that have achieved above 90% are categorized as green. Those between 50 and 89% is yellow, which is progress above 50% but not a fully achieved target, but some outputs and deliverables have in fact been achieved. We have those in orange where there is slow progress below 50% of the target and no achievement at all, which is reflected in the 0 to 10% band. Chairperson and members of the committee, during quarter two, which is July to September 2016, the department had 28 targets for the quarter under review, and of the 28 targets, 19 were achieved at 68%, 2 were partially achieved at 7%, and 7 were not achieved at all, which is between 0 and 10% at 25% of the total number of targets. Going into program 1 for the main vote, chairperson and members of the committee, these are the indicators and targets for the period under review. The first one being the completion of a service delivery model for the department. The target for quarter two was achieved. The complete compliance model for the establishment of a compliance function by the department was also achieved. The percentage of investigations initiated within 30 days in respect of verified allegations, all investigations were launched within 30 days. 2, fraud awareness for workshops were conducted during the period under review, which is in excess of the target for the period. The number of interventions recommended resulting from fraud risk management was achieved. The percentage of compliant invoices paid within 30 days was at 94%. The percentage of bids awarded within prescribed time frames was 100%. The the percentage of quotations awarded within the prescribed time frame is at 73%. The percentage of funded prioritized vacancies filled as per the recruitment plan was achieved. And moving over to ICT, we had the lease model as well as an asset register model, which was required to be implemented during the period. Those were not achieved. And moving on to fraud and corruption, misconduct cases, all cases referred for proceedings were in fact launched within our corporate services branch for disciplinary proceedings. And the percentage of default judgments against the department prevented, all opportunities for default judgments were prevented during the period under review. Moving over to Program 2, Chairperson and members of the committee, this is a new branch within the department to focus on service delivery within the public works sector as a whole. Their first target is the number of intergovernmental relations forums convened for the oversight of the public works sector. They achieved 67%. They did not hold all their meetings. Number of agreements signed for joint service delivery with provinces and municipalities achieved. Number of reviews conducted on intergovernmental structures achieved. A number of corporate plan risk assessments conducted on the public entities was achieved. Moving over to Program 3, which is Extended Public Works Program, the first target is the number of quarterly reports on public employment programs completed, one report per quarter embodying the number of work opportunities reported on the reporting system was done and achieved, number of data quality assessment reports produced, achieved, number of non-profit organizations contracted to implement the non-state sector NPO program, this was achieved at 151% in excess of the target for the quarter. Fourth, number of public bodies provided with technical support was achieved. Number of frameworks on sector conversions approved was achieved at 131%. Chairperson, I'm moving over to Program 4, which is Property and Construction Industry Policy and Research. During this period, the three areas under consideration was the development of the white paper, the review of the CIDP Act, as well as the revised BEP policy. Now, what has transpired here, even though the target show is not achieved, there was a significant progress in the development of the white paper in the department, in that the department changed its approach from an outsourcing strategy, where it experienced a number of challenges, to an insourcing approach, where the department will now identify the relevant experts for the development of the white paper, and as a result, moved out its targets to achieve this particular area. This reflects for both the public works white paper as well as the review of the CIDP Act. Moving on to the final program in DPW, and that is the Prestige. They did not achieve their target in the first period on Prestige policies approved. This is a policy on the use of residential accommodation by the executive. The policy was in fact developed. However, it has not been approved. It is still under consultation between the minister and his colleagues. Number of working days taken to resolve mechanical breakdowns after locking up a complaint at 28%, and the number of days taken to resolve emergency breakdowns after locking up a complaint at 29%, those did not achieve their relevant targets. An improvement is required in that area. And finally, number of state events planned. Two events were planned for the quarter, ultimately three were supported. Chairperson and members of the committee, some of the highlights for the quarter under review is that the service delivery model is being developed for the department that focuses on the external environment and the interaction between the department as well as the sector, parliament, and all other stakeholders that refer and reflect on the mandate of the Department of Public Works is currently being developed. There's also an initiative in the department to develop business processes, to map business processes, and to manage resources and quantify the resource requirements in the department. And this is something that achieved some kind of progress within the quarter in service delivery model, and a service provider was appointed to assist in this regard. With respect to a compliance model, the department is developing a compliance model with a view to implementing a fully-fledged compliance function within the department, and during the quarter under review, an option analysis was conducted towards the finalization of a compliance model by March 2017. With respect to investigations, 14 investigations were received during, 14 referrals were received during the quarter and the review, and all of these in the, referrals were initiated within a 30-day requirement period. Payment of invoices, 94% of all compliant invoices were also settled within the required 30-day period. Moving on to capacity building, all prioritized vacancies as per the recruitment plan were filled. Prioritized vacancies are filled within 4 months from the date of advertisement, as part of a broader government approach to dealing with capacity deficiencies in departments. With respect to fraud and corruption, 100% reported fraud and corruption and misconduct cases were subject to disciplinary processes, which is a total of 6 cases of fraud and corruption addressed and subjected to disciplinary proceedings. With respect to intergovernmental coordination, 3 agreements were signed for joint service delivery with provinces and municipality, which is 100% of the target, and this spans across 3 spheres of government for better coordination in areas of interrelated interdependencies. Chairperson, with respect to EPWP, the quarter report, the second quarter report on the public employment programs was completed for the quarter. Also, with respect to EPWP, 302 non-profit organizations were contracted for implementation of the non-state sector NPO program against a target of 200 for the quarter. With respect to technical support, which is becoming increasingly important to keep the EPWP program out of trouble with the Auditor General requirements, 196 against a target of 150 public bodies were provided with technical support. With respect to prestige and mechanical breakdowns, 141 requests were received and 61 were completed within 20 working days. With respect to emergencies, 162 requests were received and 102 completed within 4 days. 57 were not completed within the 4 working day requirement and 3 were cancelled. Also, with respect to prestige, as I mentioned earlier, 3 events against a target of 2 were supported during the period. With respect to the Program 4 and our initiatives to address underperformance, a white paper task team has been established in the department to oversee the white paper process, and the task team adopted a comprehensive framework to reaffirm the scope of the process and to define the essential linkages to facilitate participation by all stakeholders. Now, what has transpired here, Chairperson and members of the committee, is that thematic areas have been segregated within the process as a whole to identify the relevant expertise for insourcing or secondment on term contracts to the department, and a detailed action plan with time frames has been developed. As a result, some of the targets have been moved out on this basis. The department undertook to develop a concept paper to inform the review of the CIVB Act, which is the second target under this branch, and consultations with stakeholders to inform the review and enhance the concept paper were undertaken with clients of the CIDB contractors as well as the DPW. The brief to senior counsel, the drafters in fact of the papers, was developed and engaged on with our legal services unit with the terms of reference that was agreed upon, and the concept paper was presented to our executive committee. Now, the department has sought the services of a legal drafter, and the legal drafters have now been appointed and the concept paper developed with DPW as well as other stakeholders. So this process has been recalibrated to ensure that we reach our targets going forward. With respect to prestige, as I mentioned, Chairperson, already that the department did in fact develop the policy on the allocation of residential accommodation to the executive, and the minister is currently consulting with the cabinet ministers for concurrence in this regard. Chairperson, at this point I'll hand over to my colleague, Mr. Paul Zerote, to present PMT.
Thank you. Good day, Honorable Chairperson and members. The performance of the PMT in summary is reflecting on average a 67% achieved rate, with 16 of the 24 targets having been achieved, 4 partially achieved, which we'll go into detail on, 4 have not been achieved in the quarter. When one then looks at the very first program. It deals with the two targets that we managed to achieve on, which is the percentage of compliant invoices settled within 30 days of receipt on invoice. You'll recall that we had indicated that there are some measures in the past that we are implementing a new system, for example, that will help us to improve the performance, and we have seen the performance coming through on this one. Percentage reduction in non-compliance to SCM prescripts, which is also achieved. And then where we are still behind in terms of performance, as at the quarter, related to the procurement. Now, it's really issues around percentage of bids awarded within the prescribed time frame and percentage of quotations awarded within the agreed time frame. Now, I'm just going to reflect quickly on part of the reason why these have not been achieved, and also just confirm that the procurement reforms, which were basically being run throughout the year, have effectively, been implemented, but only towards the end of the year. I'll give an example on leasing. The major reform which happens in Program 4, dealing with the manner in which we procure leases, that tender went out sometime in November. It has now closed on the 28th of February, so the impact of those reforms effectively come in the new year. Now the reality is the reforms had to also be aligned with the new framework on the procurement of leases, which Treasury will be publishing sometime this month for implementation for lease procurement within government, effective in April. So those efforts that we made effectively came too late in the year. The reforms that related to construction, which is also quite a big area for us, we took a view that we needed to establish panels, and we are currently in the process of evaluating the panels for professional services. Now, this directly impacted the performance as well when it came to Program 3, which I will deal with when we get to it. When one then looks at Program 2, in fact, the yellows there should be green, and I'll explain what that means. So with respect to Program 2, we have achieved all of the four. With respect to the issue of percentage of feasibility studies completed within scheduled timeframes and percentage of evaluations completed within scheduled timeframes, the target was 80%. So we achieved that target, so that should have been green. I apologize for that. If one then moves to Program 3, which I alluded to previously as well. In essence, this program should be driven by the pipeline as determined by the user department. Now, this effectively was the second year that we are doing a separate APP specifically for the PMCE. So admittedly, there are certain areas that we have not gotten 100% right, and this is the one area that we were still implementing a lot of the reforms, which have impacted also on the performance as well. So for instance, if one takes a target like number of approved infrastructure project designs, it ought to be driven predominantly by the project pipeline that you are seeing. How we are managing that in the new APP is we have allowed that to coincide for all of these measures with the implementation of the IDMS, which is helping us to have a much firmer structure on these areas. However, the performance of that was 56%. Linked to that, the number of approved infrastructure projects raised for tender, 38% performance. The achievement came with the number of infrastructure sites handed over for construction, and partially achieved when it came to percentage of infrastructure projects completed within the construction period and within budget. The number of EPWP work opportunities created through construction project is sitting at 105% performance. The next slide deals with program 4, which is real estate management. In this one, there are two targets that I would like to talk to, which where we have not achieved at all. With respect to the one that we have achieved is the percentage of contracts renewed or terminated within the prescribed time frame. However, when it comes to the amount of properties that we have made available for leasing out, particularly where the properties are vacant, we've had to re-energize and refocus the efforts that we have made in this area. So previously we had committed that we would go out, identify a list, put out an advert, and unfortunately the adverts that we have put out have not yielded a very strong result. We are still evaluating what the reasons for that are, but we have also taken a view that we need to rope in experts in the form of estate agents, for example, for us to be able to cover the reach and to enable these numbers to start going up in terms of responsiveness. On the other hand, when it comes to the issue of dealing with the properties that, let's say, we deem to be surplus to the estate, we have started a discussion that starts to say, if one looks at our portfolio, all 92,500 of them, which are those that absolutely core in terms of us meeting our mandate, we have started to break those down so that we start to identify the properties that are specifically additional to or surplus to our requirements. With that, we will then be taking a view, an investment decision around whether we dispose some of them or not. But those will be in the areas of residential accommodation in the main, where we are starting to identify surplus, particularly in some of the remote areas. The target that deals with the percentage of leases awarded to black owned companies. I think we struggled on this one for a particular reason. And that reason is that really the policy around that and the programs are only being finalized this month. So we are hoping that the minister will sign the property management empowerment policy this month, and which will enable us to have a much more structured program going into the new financial year, specifically talking to the achievement of the award to black-owned companies. Fortunately, the Treasury regulations have also provided more clarity, and we are obliged to commit to comply with those from 1 April as well. Program 5, two targets. Percentage of removable assets updated on the asset register for completed infrastructure projects, and number of provincial removable asset registers assessed for compliance, so that was done. So those two targets we have met. Program 6 is always an interesting one, because you'll recall that in March 2016 we finalized the asset register. With the finalization of the asset register, it has enabled us to start getting into the depth of our understanding of the portfolio. Program 6 is playing a critical role in terms of ensuring that we understand what we are dealing with. Since then, we have managed to come up with a facilities management and a maintenance strategy. We have got specific programs, some of which that I will deal with in the later slides. But it has also come with its challenges, because this is where the majority of the process reforms have happened. If one looks at the first target that deals with number of buildings with scheduled maintenance contracts in place, you'll see that we have achieved that I think it was 90 with a target of about 60 something. And the core of the strategy is that we have to move away from an organization that has previously focused itself on responding to breakdowns, so the reactive maintenance, to a deliberate strategy that says we must be proactive in everything that we do. And I'll give you a quick example. Here we are talking about an ability to take a building or a structure and its component in that context. So what you do is you take a building and you take I think buildings have a useful life of about 50 years. You then start to focus on the critical components of the building, your air conditioners, your lifts, and so forth, and ensure that for each and every one of those components, you have a structured preventative maintenance and scheduled maintenance plan. We successfully completed our pilot on the new approach for Pretoria Regional Office. And I can tell you, with Pretoria Regional Office, we have accounted for each and every single lift in the Pretoria region. Each and every lift in the Pretoria region that is on our asset register is accounted for. It has a scheduled maintenance plan. And since we have done that, we have had minimal problems within the Pretoria Regional Office. So we have taken that blueprint, and soon we'll be rolling that out to the rest of the country. We have a lift strategy, we have a boiler strategy, we have an HVAC strategy, which is heating, ventilation, and air conditioning strategy that we'll be implementing. So that is what is underlying that first target. The second target then deals with the EPWP work opportunities created through maintenance projects. This, in essence, is capital related. So this has been collapsed and measured under Program 3, which is construction and projects. So that Program 6 really focuses on unscheduled maintenance, on planned maintenance, on scheduled maintenance, and so forth. So what we have done is, going forward, we have corrected this in subsequent APP. When we deal with percentage of SMME contracts awarded on the planned maintenance program, we are sitting at 100% performance. Then perhaps the next one, which is sitting at 10%, is very interesting for us and falls right within the context of the reform. So here is an organization that has spent most of its time responding to breakdowns. And we have taken the strategy and we have said we need to ensure, for instance, a lift which is a mechanical component needs to be serviced at certain intervals in line with legislation. It then gives you the benefit of not having the breakdown or minimal breakdown. So we have taken the whole strategy and turned it around. We then find that the targets that we had put in place were put in place before we actually had a full inventory of our movable assets and the critical components. So in essence, this is one of the measures that going forward we have addressed. Our strategy was to say we've got 92,500 properties as well. From a benchmarking perspective that we have done as well, you do not measure the performance of each and every single building. You measure an acceptable sample. So our facilities management strategy now says we are starting with what we call the top 300 in 180 days. So we have selected 300 buildings where we are putting best practice and sometimes effectively the kind of strategies that are leading the sector. In the 300 buildings, we have made them visible through a strategy that involves placing sensors in some of the key and critical components. So we'll be monitoring more accurately the performance of the 300 buildings. When the 180 days is finished, we will then accelerate that to 1,500 buildings. And then going forward, we will measure the performance across the board of 7,000 buildings, and they will have all of these measures placed on them. Then we deal with the reduction of energy and the reduction of water in both those targets. I think the retrofit program in particular has enabled us to achieve the two programs. We still do have a desire and an intention, or rather an ambition, to start the program of generation, but it looks like the generation through the installation of photovoltaic PV solar panels, rooftop panels, is one that will only take place in the new financial year. Some of the highlights, just for emphasis, payment of invoices, I think we have seen an improvement there, where 91% of the invoices now comply within 30 days. Compliance to SCM, 97% reduction in non-compliance to SCM prescripts. Awarding of bids, slight improvement, however, we are of the opinion that once the reforms fully take effect, we will see a lot more in the efficiencies as far as those measures are concerned. Under Program 2, feasibility studies, valuations, and the assessment of building performance, I think we have done quite well in achieving those three targets, which then assist us then in taking a more precise view in terms of the information that drives the strategies, for instance, the 4300 program that I spoke about. From a project perspective, we still think there's still some work that we will do, you know, to achieve closer alignment to proper planning linked to IDMS in the new financial year. However, we have managed to continue to improve, but I think not at the rates in this financial year that we would have desired. So we have managed to approve infrastructure project designs, have them ready for tender. We have also handed a few sites for construction, and 66% and 64% of infrastructure projects completed within agreed construction period and budget respectively. EPWP work opportunities, again within projects, 4,192 against the target of 4,000 in the quarter. Lease renewals, we managed to renew 8, but again, the new approach to leasing will see much greater efficiencies coming through in the new financial year, as indicated. Program 5, I think, we managed to fairly stabilize. Two of those targets achieved. Project capitalized and added to the movable asset register on completion, and the assessment of the provincial immovable asset register, two provinces, KZN and Gauteng, assessed in the quarter. On the side of facilities management, I think the strategy, as I indicated, of scheduled and more planned maintenance as opposed to the reactive maintenance, that is something that we are grappling with. We are starting to see a lot more structure and stability. So in the 90 buildings, we've got scheduled maintenance contracts in place in the quarter. And in fact, what we have done as well, we have got really large facilities in excess of 100,000 square meters, for instance, that require specific response. And we have taken a view that 15 of those facilities, we will do a comprehensive condition assessment. We have done two already. Once we are complete, we will then ensure that we have specialized facilities management contracts in place specific to those facilities, bearing in mind an appreciation for the strategy that we have adopted now on facilities management. The reduction in energy consumption and water consumption, I think we continue to do quite well in those areas. What you see coming in the further financial years will be the move towards more generation. We've got a rooftop surface that is quite impressive, and we've taken a view that will enable us to put solar roof rooftop solar panels that will generate power. We are currently doing the feasibility on that with the assistance of the DBSA. And in summary, quarter-on-quarter performance for the PMC 54% to 67, 77 to 68 for the department. And the summary with respect to performance put slightly differently, 68% and 67% for the department and the PMC respect. Sorry, I'm struggling. 68% and 67%. And then with an average of 67.3%. Moving on to some of the responses to the underperforming measures, performance measures that I spoke to earlier. We were quite disappointed that we put measures in place to identify and advertise properties, but the response rates were a bit low. We are working on a terms of reference to try and involve estate agents to assist us. We believe that it may help us to do valuations and also ensure that it helps us on the property management from a perspective of accessing potential persons to who can be identified to lease those facilities. In terms of the lease awarded to black-owned entities, the policy, as I said, is currently being finalized. We've also got the treasury regulations which come into effect in April. In fact, by the next week or two, we should have finalized the incorporation of the new regulations into our ICM policies. So we'll be ready for implementation for 1 April. This will then set the tone for us to put in place a properly structured transformation program. I'll report that we have had a number of sessions led by the Minister with the financial institutions as well. For instance, we have identified that one of the biggest stumbling blocks of the transformation in this context is access to funding. And we have had a number of engagements, not just with the financial institutions, but with the sector as well, with a view to come with a response that will enable us to have a properly structured program that will be supported by all the participants in the sector, including the financial institutions. On unscheduled maintenance, as indicated, unscheduled maintenance or day-to-day maintenance, as we refer to it, it's our ambition that we will reduce this. However, we are deliberately moving towards preventative maintenance, which will help us to manage our facilities better. And the top 300 facilities program is the one I referred to earlier. As indicated, the majority of the breakdowns currently are linked to functionality. It's your lifts, heating and ventilation, air conditioning, boilers, etc. So if we get that trust from a critical components perspective, we know that buildings will function. It will enable us then to focus on the quality of the accommodation without worrying that a lift is not working or an air conditioner is not working. As indicated, we have embarked on a comprehensive condition assessment with the purpose of implementing upgrades and ongoing maintenance programs for these critical components. Going forward, I've kind of touched on the issues around the procurement reforms, centralized the supplier database, appointment of a panel of lessors. That closed 28th of February. We are in evaluation stage. Continued improvement of ICT solutions from movable asset management, leasing in portal condition assessment module and full implementation of the Akiba system, which is our ERP. Real estate investment services, fast tracking of valuations, feasibilities and disposals, so that we are able to continue to achieve the monthly targets. The head of construction and project management has commenced to the program of ensuring that on the technical side, we have a specific capacity building program which will support particularly the implementation of IDMS. But at the end of the day, it's about delivery of projects to our user requirements and to the right level of quality. Real estate management services, leasing framework comes into effect, which is a national treasury framework, April. Revision of the lease agreements is an ongoing issue, and the standardization of the lease agreements is absolutely critical, which will assist in ensuring that the sector engages with us on a consistent basis. Facilities management, central to our strategy, as indicated, is the top 300 program. The development of internal technical skills capacity linked to the resuscitation of the workshops. We will then move to the financial information, which the CFO will then cover.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I will just take a walk through of the financial performance of both the main vote as well as the property management trading entity. I'll start with the main vote. The performance as it stands, that's for the period from the 1st of April 2016 to the 30th of September 2016, which is two quarters that have expired in the year. On slide, the slide that's on the screen, it indicates that on an overall basis, we are at 48% of the total allocation being spent as at the half-year mark. As we may just recall, the total allocation for the main vote is 6.5 billion rand. We had, by the end of September, spent 3.2 billion rand of the 6.5 billion rand, making it up to 48%. In terms of the different line items, we sit with compensation of employees sitting at 48%, the goods and services sitting at 33%, and transfers and subsidies, which is the lion's share of the budget or the allocation of the main vote, sitting at 50%. And the payment for capital assets, which is the machinery and equipment or intangible assets, sitting at 20%, making up that 48% in totality. When you compare year on year, if you compare the current year 6 months expired with the last year 6 months expired, we see a slight improvement from what we had in the previous year, where we had 38-39% of our expenditure of the allocation being spent in that period. Year. The next slide just indicates where the lion's share of the allocation is allocated to, and like I indicated before, that 85% of our allocation is under transfers and subsidies in the main vote. Just a quick breakdown of what the expenditure levels are at. In terms of the compensation of employees' expenditure, which is sitting at 48%, it is in line, more or less, in line with the year that the period that has expired at 15%, which is the second quarter of the year. And then, and this expenditure is in line with the projections that we had set ourselves right at the beginning, and we are not projecting any over expenditure for this line item or this economic classification expenditure. The goods and services spending is at 33% and is in line with the projections that you had set in terms of the process which all the interventions and requirements are in terms of the tender stage or quotation stage, that we were going to be around 34%. We've achieved 33%. We believe that as the procurement processes have been complete, this expenditure will improve when we go forward. And we also are not experiencing or projecting any over expenditure in this area. The transfers and subsidies, which is the lion's share of the allocation, this is in line with the drawings and the drawdown schedules that have been agreed up front. The approval for the adjustments of funds, which is sitting in there for agreement, has been approved and is sitting in the right classification as opposed to what was happening in the prior years. And in this area, the funds will be expended fully because these are the transfers, the bulk of these are to the entities and to the EPWP bodies. The machinery and equipment expenditure is sitting at 20%, which is in line with the drawings that we had for the first quarter. The ICT commitments have actually been done for the third and fourth quarter finalization of this financial year. In that respect, we'll see an upsurge in the expenditure when it comes to quarter three and quarter four, which we've already realized. In terms of the transfers, this is a list of the transfers, total of 6.5 billion rand in terms of the allocation, but what makes up the transfers is about 5.5 billion rand, and like we indicated, 2.8 billion rand of that has already been transferred, which is about 50% of the transfers or the allocation that's set. Year-on-year comparative for the similar period last year, we're sitting at 40%. In terms of the expenditure per program, as members, honorable members may recall, we have five programs in the main vote. Administration, which is the total allocation is 516 million rand, and as at the end of September, which is, I must apologize, it says end of June, in terms of the thing, the expenditure was sitting at 41%. Intergovernmental coordination was sitting at 20%, and the EPWP was at 47%. The Program on Property, Construction and Industry Policy was sitting at 51%, and Prestige was at 40%, giving us an overall of 48% of the actual expenditure that we've had for the total of the main vote. That concludes the main vote. I will then move on to the property management training entity and start off the presentation on slide 42 with a summary of the revenue that we are collecting on behalf of the PMTE for the two quarters that have expired in the year. The different revenue lines that we have are one is state-owned accommodation, the private-owned accommodation charges, management fees, the augmentation that we get from the main board, rental debtors, and other revenue. The total of what we project in terms of our budget of what we're going to be collecting as revenue is 11.8 billion rand, and to date, as of the 30th of September, we had collected 5.4 billion rand of that revenue, which accounts for about 46% of the projected revenue that we had set up. On the expenditure side, which is on slide 43, we've given the expenditure per economic classification. In terms of the total expenditure budget, we're sitting at about 11.8 billion rand. And to date, as of the 30th of September, we've spent about 6.1 billion rand of the expenditure of 11.8 billion, giving us 51% of our projected expenditure. If you look at the revenue against the expenditure, honorable members will realize that there's a match of our revenues against our expenditure, in the sense that we'd like to ensure that the property management training entity, as in required by the regulations that govern the training accounts, that it does not break even, and we recover all costs that we had incurred. In terms of the different cost classes, you've got the compensation of employees, which is a total allocation of 1.5 billion rands, of which we had spent for the half year mark 744 million rands, which is about 51%, just 1% higher than the period that had expired. Goods and services, we're sitting at about 270 million rands of the 705 million rands allocation, which is about 38%. And cleaning and gardening and services at 48%, which is a total of 250 million rand allocation. This is an expenditure that we incur on our buildings, including on all the costs for the Department of Justice. And we are at advanced stages of devolving this function back to the client department, which means we will just remain with the expenditure for the buildings that we occupy as a department. The operating leases, that's the lion's share of the expenditure, as you can see, in terms of the total allocation, that's 4 billion of the 11.2 billion, 8 billion rand of the expenditure. These are the leases that we acquire or conclude from the private sector on behalf of client departments where we are not in a position to provide them with accommodation utilizing the stock that we have of our own properties. On that one, we've spent, or we've already expended about 51% of our allocation on that one. On repairs, we had spent about 421 million rand, or 422 million rand, which is 52% of the 813 or 840 million rand allocation. On the maintenance, 56%, on municipal services, 62%. The property rates, we had spent about 67% of the allocation, and we'll explain the reasons as to why each one of these are not aligned with the 50% mark that we are at. Those are the current type of expenditures. Then we have our payments for capital assets, which is the purchase of our machinery and equipment and intangible assets. Total allocation of 40 million, we spent about 23, which is 58%. And the refurbishments of our property, 1 billion, and we spent about 556 million rand, which is 51% of that. And then the DPW capital infrastructure, which is an allocation from the main vote to the PMTE for specific capital infrastructure projects that we run as a PMTE on behalf of the main vote. There's a total allocation of 702 million, and we spent, used up about 238 million, 34% of that. In terms of the slicing of the pie, in terms of where the actual allocations are, in terms of the of the different classes, the current payments is almost about 34% of our actual allocation. Transfers sitting at 10%, and the payment for capital assets making up the residual 16%. And we then indicate the further classes of the current items in terms of the current expenditure. And 46% of their expenditure, as you can see, members, is sitting with the operating leases, as I did indicate, that that's the bulk of our expenditure, that's where we are. Just doing a little bit of notes on the individual items, where we add in terms of spending, and trying to do a variance explanation. The expenditure on compensation of employees, which is sitting at 51%, is in line with the time that has lapsed, as I did indicate, and the full budget will be spent, and we are not projecting any over expenditure as at the end of the financial year. And the goods and services, we're spending at 38%, currently sitting at 38% in relation to the time of 50%. We have actually all placed some orders, and delivery will take place during the third and fourth quarters of the year. Invoices will be processed and expenses will increase during the next quarter. Remember, what you are presenting here is the cash-based financial performance and not the accrual-based. If it were accrued, we would have reflected this kind of expenditure and we would have shown a much better picture. Under cleaning and gardening, spending is at 48% and slightly below the guideline. We are expecting some level of under-expenditure in this area. As a savings or the under-expenditure in this area, we will be applying that shortly to that saving to the shortfall that will be experienced under the municipal services budget that I will talk to in a while. The operating leases are spending at 51%, and we also not projecting any over expenditure on the repairs of 2% of expenditure, which is higher than anticipated. But the implementation of new projects will be delayed slightly to ensure that no over expenditure occurs in terms of the management of the cash flow. And the maintenance, which is still at 56%, which is high in relation to the 50%, this is due to accrued expenditure emanating from previous management, from previous years. We've put an intervention in place to ensure that this expenditure level is slowed down to ensure that we do not end up with a very high over expenditure. The municipal services spending is at 62% against the 50%. The projected shortfall will be financed through the expected under expenditure, which we indicated earlier on under the cleaning and gardening services. This expenditure is based on actual consumption and should in future decrease based on energy efficient measures that we implemented in the PMTE at our building. The transfers and subsidies. All expenditure against this classification relates to property rates payable to local governments or the municipalities. As you know, there was a big issue around all debts that government departments owe to municipalities. We have then activated a intervention to resolve that, and because of the conclusion of that intervention, we are now seeing a whole lot of invoices that come from bank or claims having been settled, and hence the over expenditure if you compare to what we had indicated. Another, the machinery and equipment expenditure is at 58%, but it is in line with the projections for this quarter, as the budget represents once off payments for supply and delivery of capital assets. The item only represents 0.3% of the total budget in any case, and no over expenditure is being projected. The refurbishment spending is at 51%, as at the end of the first quarter, in line with projections based on program of projects to be implemented. The budgets have been realigned between projects to ensure full expenditure as at the end of the financial year. In cases where there's projects that are underspending and others seem to be overspending, we do a realignment to make sure that we smooth the spending on this area. And on the DPW capital, spending is very low at 34% in relation to the 50% that we said the budget has been realigned as well between projects to ensure full expenditure as at the end of the financial year. The expenditure will increase during the year on projects awarded at the beginning of the financial year. That is one important one is the ports of entry at the Antarctica project expedition that we fund to go set up the infrastructure at the island that we providing for environmental affairs. We are not projecting any under expenditure in this area as well. Just a quick indication of the my apologies. Now at the slide 48. That just zoomed into the capital expenditure specifically that deals with the clients, to just give members an indication of where we are in terms of spending and executing projects on behalf of clients. And the total allocation that we have is about 2 billion rand, made up of those clients, agriculture, arts and culture, correctional services, home affairs, justice, labor, rural development, and SAPs. And in terms of the total allocation, we've shown the percentage. Total allocation in terms of agriculture, we have projects to the tune allocated to the tune of about 11.5 million, and we've spent about 1.6, which is about 15%. I'll explain the variance later. Arts and culture, 262, and we spent about 110 million rands to date. Correctional services, 478, and we said 238 that we've spent, which is about 50%. Defense, spending at 29% of the 230 million, which is 42 million. Home Affairs, 50 million against the 20.3 million that we've used up, 41%. And justice at 508 allocation, we've spent about 300 million of that. And labor, 60 million, and 41 rural development, and SAPS is sitting at 50%. So principally, if one looks at this portfolio, you realize that the big ones, we've done pretty well in terms of the, not that bad, in terms of the spend to date against what was allocated for the execution of projects on behalf of those clients. Just going into the little detail in terms of, the difference of the budget against the projections. For the culture, like we indicated, is sitting at 15%, which is kind of low when you compare to where we are in the year. We believe that spending will increase during the remainder of the financial year to ensure full expenditure as at the financial year. The amount of 11.6 million rand will be spent in totality. Arts and culture is sitting at 42%, which is also below 50%. 80% of this budget is allocated to four major projects that are currently under construction. As soon as projects get into construction stage, that's when the actual spending pace starts to accelerate, and we'll see that now that we've gone past the planning phases of this. So the expenditure will increase with the latter part of the, or the latter two quarters of the year. Correctional services spending is at 50%, which is in line with the projection. 25% of this budget, however, is allocated to only two major projects that are also currently under construction, and spending is going to be realized. The spending will remain stable during the remainder of the financial year to ensure full expenditure of at the end of the year. Defense is sitting at 9%. The budget is allocated to several projects that are currently on tender or under construction. And as soon as the ones that are complete, the tender process is complete, and they get into the stage of construction, we'll see the process of spending or the pace of spending accelerated quite considerably. Interventions are being put in place to ensure that we actually unblock the areas in the pipeline of tender to ensure that the spending increases during the remainder of the financial year and ensure that full expenditure for the year is realized. Home Affairs, 41%. The budget is allocated to several projects that are currently on tender or under construction. 40% of the budget is allocated to one project which is currently under construction and will be. They moved into construction, so the actual improved expenditure will start to see realizing with the remainder of the year. Justice is at 59%. And there are several projects in this area that have also moved into construction phase, and we are monitoring this program very closely, and the client is aware of potential increased expenditure trends that are going to be realized, and we are not projecting any over expenditure. On the labor, spending is at 34%, which can be perceived to be low. The budget is allocated to several projects relating to site clearance and new construction. So it has not moved to the stage of construction where you can see it's all part of the site clearance and the planning. The spending will increase during the remainder of the year to ensure full expenditure, because then things will start to accelerate once they move away from the planning stages. Rural development, which is 15% of spending, which is a small amount. The budget is mainly allocated to one project that will be placed on tender during the financial year, so we believe that 1.5 million rands will be fully used up. SEPS, which is the bulk of the allocation from clients after correctional services, we are at 50% of the allocation, and there's about 181 projects that are currently in different stages of procurement. So they are at different stages of procurement, they are still not graduated into construction, and as soon as the construction phase is reached, we'll see a spending on those areas for the remainder of the year. I think, Chair and Honourable Chair and members, that should conclude the financial performance report for the main board and the PMQ. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think this might be a propitious time to take comments and queries, questions from members. Mm-hmm.
The first hand I see is that of Honorable Kwala Barnett. You may proceed.
Shall I? Thank you, Chair. In Program 1, what steps have been taken to deal with the issues of slow spending under goods and service? Look, it's mainly due to delays in receiving invoices, but what are you doing about it? Because it's hitting computer services, legal services, etc. How many service providers are we looking at here, and how many chances do you give service providers in this regard before you dispense with their services? Also, what is the total number of senior managers who receive performance bonuses? What was the cost of the department? And why is the percentage of funded prioritized vacancies standing at 73%? How many vacancies must still be filled under Program 5? Which are the positions and when will they be filled? And what's the impact on the department's ability to fulfill your mandate? And then the EPWP, the incentive grant, now for provinces, had a huge increase, 49.5% increase in nominal terms. Now, which provinces are not complying with the DORA provisions, and what's the impact on service delivery? Could you clarify the reason for the appointment of the 189 data captures on the 3 months contract? It's thinking in my own mind, it's probably to capture the missing information as highlighted by the AG, but I'm guessing. And then how much of the $9.4 million was spent on those contracted workers, and have they indeed been absorbed into the department, or was it a one-off? Program 4, the ACP stated that the white papers of 97 and 99 would be reviewed. Why haven't they? You stated that the CIDB Act would be reviewed. Why haven't you? In spite of stating the built environment professions policy would be developed, it hasn't been done. Why? And looking at the prestige policy, now Program 5 plan to have 4 prestige policies approved in this quarter, not 1 approved. Why? You also stated it would take 20 working days to resolve mechanical breakdowns. After complaints were logged, of 141 requests, 61 were completed within 20 days. That's a 28% fail. Why? You also undertook to deal with emergency breakdowns within 4 days. Another fail is 29%. Why? And finally, just a reminder that the department agreed on the 16th of August last year to do a presentation on consultants, and we've not yet had it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'm sure you have noted the questions and comments. You went a bit fast, caller. They might.
It's a fast department.
Yeah.
If they like it, speak slow, then tell me.
And
we got it.
I'm sure that the
so
30 minutes ago.
Where they didn't
Can
fully
me?
Get it,
just
they just
me.
Asked you to recap.
No problem.
Honorable Mayor Maciela.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks for the presentations that we got this morning. I just have one comment to say. At least now we have scheduled maintenance plans for our different buildings, which is very good, because I think this was a situation where we're doing very poorly as the department. Mm-hmm. We did not have a maintenance plan for our buildings, and in most cases they were causing chaos. So this, please, let's have it spread into all other buildings that we're having. Thank you, Honourable.
Honourable Mayor Maciela, thanks for that. You are the institutional memory of the committee. I found you here. So you know what you're speaking about when you refer to the planned maintenance. The next was Honorable Mayor Kopane Kinakoyahume.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, mine is on a program 3, that is EPWP. We were told that about 302 NPOs were contracted for the implementation of the non-state sector. And it seems if they've done really very well. It's 151%. They've reached their target. I just wanted to find out if maybe they can explain which provinces they've contracted these NPOs, which municipalities they have contracted. My other question is based on the Public Works white paper that the target was zero, but he tried to explain that the performance is not noticeable, but they are in progress of doing something. They further indicated that there were challenges with capacity for the development of white paper, and they were going to enforce the expertise. He didn't tell us in terms of the time frame, when are they going to do so? Sorry. When are they going to do so? And enforcing, would it mean that they are going to contract people from outside, that will be the consultant? If so, how many of the consultants will be needed to help them to do this? And if maybe they can also tell us which registered companies outside government where this consultant will be outsourced, if maybe they can explain that. My other question, Chair, is with regard to, where is that slide? Chair, if my question is, I just need a clarity with regard to slide 43 and slide 45. Slide 43, when you look at it, just give us the summary expenditure per economic classification. There is a percentage of total budget, it is there. But if you check to the budget allocation per current items, that is in slide 45, I don't see a correlation. For example, under compensation of employees, it clearly indicated here is 12%. But if I check on the chart here, I don't see that. There is no correlation in terms of the numbers as indicated here on the slide 43. If maybe they can explain why there is a disparity among these two. From there, I'm covered by my colleague, Diane Colabano. Thank you, Chair.
Re lebogile motlhompedi kopane. Diyel Akbar Adams.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the department also. Chair, we can say there's some improvement on the department, but you know this department was called Department of Clean Weight. I don't know if it's still called that, or it's now been back restored to its proper name, Department of Public Works. Chair, just on the PMTE, you know, I had a question from my constituency which I need to raise. What measures does PMTE does in terms of acquiring ministers and deputy ministers' houses? Well, some of the houses are very acquired at exorbitant prices, and the repairs on some of these houses are such an enormous amount that you can buy about 5 houses just for the repair of one house in that regard. And unfortunately, this comes from an estate agent. I've asked him if he was an aggrieved estate agent. He says no, it's not, because it's not in that big bracket. But I mean, to go and spend 25 to 30 million versus a house, and then spend another 10 and 25 million, mm-hmm. between 10 and 25 million for the upgrade and the repairs in such a house. I mean, that is really something that you can build much more houses for that. And then, Chair, the...
Just before you go to your next point, Honourable Member, what would be of assistance in regard to the example that you gave? What would also assist the department and the ministry is to identify the area or privilege them with the relevant information, so that it's not a generalization, it's something that can be looked at specifically.
No, I think they know, Chair, because, I mean, they
bought
houses
sure
out, out here in, what's that, Tafelsig and Welgelegen and all that places. Various places they bought exorbitant prices for those houses. Specifically, these deputy ministers and ministers' houses, the complex in Welgelegen, just behind Welgemoed, those areas, as such. And then in Oranjezig, up here, up the mountain, it's exorbitant prices. Plus the block of flats which are now being renovated at Reiger Park. Exorbitant price. Living the life of luxury. And the furniture that was going to spend on the, well, the money that will be spent on that furniture, it's way beyond, way above the, I think, the way that the Rupert or someone will be living. Yeah, but I mean, people feel it's unnecessary expenditure.
I get your point, but I would still insist that where we can provide figures, we do so, so that there's a benchmark that we can check against. Please proceed.
Then, I think 9.6 million was given to the Parliamentary Villages Board. Now, I would love to find out what this money is for, because the contractors that they've got in the Parliamentary Villages, which the members are complaining, the work of that contractors are of such poor standard that these leasing agents just say that the money that we get from public works, we can't afford quality contractors in that regard to work in the Parliamentary Villages Board or to work in the Parliamentary Villages. So I want to find out who checks on that, who does the final quality check when these guys are finished working in the houses that the MPs are staying in the various, the three various parks and that. And then, Chair, where was this other one? Let me stand with that. I'll the next round, Chair. If there's a next round, I'll get to that. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, let's hope you find your third point that you wanted to raise. I think this is a convenient time to take responses and a rejoinder from the department.
Let me start with the last, because often that's what we will remember. The last issues that relate particularly to the prestige. The two areas, I think, are the ministerial houses. We've got measures. We evaluate the improvements, the requirements that we have to do to deal with the ministerial houses on the basis of a proper cost, benefit, and evaluation perspective, investment perspective. The reality is that maybe I won't go to that. Is it Welgelegen? I'll deal with the issue. I think I have an understanding. Because it's based on the report that was made with regard to the big, in the large costs that were allocated related to the improvements that occurred in 2012, 2011, which were the subject of the SIU investigation at the end. I think honourable members will realise that to some extent will the I'll just check with the DDG whether that report has been filed. I think about 2 weeks ago I had had a discussion because we're going through the SIU investigation so that we
we actually have a discussion at the end of this month to look at which ones are finalized, which ones are not finalized, and what are the proposals with regard to those, and the recovery in some cases where there was overcharging that may have occurred. But largely, some of the issues we've discovered there is that, in general, most of these houses are old. The infrastructure is decaying. Secondly, the heritage assets. In the cases where there were also problems of procurement, you find that the quantitative surveyor found that there were issues of overcharging, which we are going to deal with. But lastly, what we are doing now is our asset investment area in PMC, which is a new area that we have, does an analysis and says, if you have a house that is whose market value is 5 million, how much can you spend to improve it? Even if it's almost 50 years, some of them are in that region, 50 years.
And
some older. What do you do then to deal with that? Do you then have to apply for demolition and reconstruction? And what will be the implications? And in some cases, we're going to have to face the issue of dealing with the communities around those areas who then begin to say, you are actually changing the face of the area. And the second one is, I have not made the proposal with my bosses, the minister and the deputy minister, with regard to this. It has been a thought and an instruction I've given with regard to, for example, in Victoria, where we're saying, if we've got sufficient land in the vicinity of the area where the current ministerial houses are, what further development can we do to consolidate all of the ministerial houses within that precinct? Firstly, to save the cost, and that relates to security and all of those things. Then we can allow staff to release some of the police and rather do security fencing on the basis of an estate, proper estate, which would use technology and the intelligence that's available to deal with those issues. And that is the professional teams are now working on that program. Then we'll be in a position to dispose of what we don't need outside of that estate and make sure that then we can concentrate on the safety of the ministers and also the ability to provide appropriate accommodation that is related to that. Cape Town is a bit tricky because it's an old area. It's not very easy to consult, but there are areas where we can do the same. So the teams are also looking at what you can do with regard to those. But at the moment, we haven't had, it would be extremely difficult for any one of those people to develop any house in the kind of proportions that we had before. I mean, you would have a house of 12 million, whose market value is about 12 million, and that's the latest offer, for example, that was made by UCT to buy the house. And then we were about to spend 25, when we discovered it, we reduced it to something like 19 million on the particular house. But that would have included some addition to the structure and issues that relate to the underground, underground infrastructure. What we are ignoring, actually, generally in South Africa, is the full analysis of what's wrong underground because of the aging of the infrastructure. It's serious. It's going to cause, I think if you see the kind of floods you see in Johannesburg, in Pretoria, where there are storms, it's because of what's happening on the ground. It's being ignored consistently. Leave alone the fact that sometimes we don't maintain the storm waters and remove the stuff that is there. The reality is that these places have grown over a period of time without the concomitant growth in an improvement in the underground infrastructure. And one of these days we're going to find an explosion of that process. And I think the last calculations that we've done were in billions, tens of billions of kind. And that just doesn't apply to public works only. Let me go straight to the specific case you've dealt with, for example, which is Rajasthan. The flat chairperson, where the directors general are generally
accommodated. And I think we also accommodated deputy ministers as well. That flat is very old. I think it was in the newspaper in about 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. The flat is very old. Ever since I have arrived, I used to say to even my family and staff members, don't announce, don't tell anybody when I'm here, because every time I arrive here, did you come to my flat to complain? I think the one...
This is a place in Muli Point.
No, no, it's in... Rondebosch, actually, yeah. It's in Rondebosch. So we're still coming to the Muli Point one. Because that's the second phase of that. If we don't make those investments, honorable member, we are just postponing the cost, because it escalates. The DG, from the DG of the year, one day reported that as she was washing one day, the affluent from one of the flats just got into her kitchen sink and the bathroom. Imagine you're washing and you think you are going to remove your own debt, and then you find that the worst debt, the black debt, almost, not the brown one, right into your water. And that's the kind of decay that had occurred in that particular. The lifts were dangerous. The infrastructure underground was clearly problematic. I mean, if you come in during the rainy season, it's June here in Cape Town, June, you always pray that you won't find yourself in trouble in Rajasthan if you are going to park underground, because that was another one of the problems. So we had to deal with it. I postponed it in 2013 when I was informed of it, until I got the experience myself, which we started in 2014, the cost was going to be very high. But what we also did was to then say, but some of these flats are four-bedroom flats, big space, very inefficient space-wise, chairperson. So when we're doing the renovation, I think the guys came with the renovation of the same arrangement. I said, but you can't do this. Let us use this space to actually increase the capacity, because government has grown over the period of time. That DGs were outside of whom, for whom we have to hire, we have to buy new accommodation, etc. Why don't we use this process to reconfigure the whole arrangement and see what additional units we can get out of this? And I think that is one of the things that ended up having to be done with regard to that investment. So that journalist who calculated a certain figure was almost like taking everything that has nothing to do with the units, which has everything to do with the investment in the infrastructure to make the place operational and functional, took everything, added, divided by, I don't know even the number that they used, because it has nothing to do with the number of flats, the output we are getting after the renovations. I think he may have taken what was before and divided by that by the total cost. And that was published. A tender was issued, and I think the company appointed was a local company around here, empowered company, and that is the issue with regard to Rajasthan in particular. The only problem is that we didn't respond publicly.
I think it's necessary that the ministry department you do respond, otherwise the impression is left there about wasteful expenditure.
The second issue that was raised.
Before we move to the second issue, Honorable Adams.
Sorry, that was the other thing in relation to that. DG, the flat at the penthouses in Musenberg at the beach, also for DGs. Some of it is standing empty since the start of the term.
You all have one.
And no one is there. Well, some of it is certain.
This has been allocated to somebody. We've done the allocation. Yeah. I know it's a very unpopular one. The acquisition of this was in probably 2011, 10, somewhere around that line. I think their unpopularity relates to efficiency with regard to the relationship with Parliament. Because everyone who goes there will tell you that they rather prefer to arrive early in the morning sometimes, because to be there, you have to wake up at 5 to make your time here. There's something about inefficiency of the traffic or the overburdening of the traffic infrastructure that relates to this. Again, in that area, in that space, we had to stagger this Honorable Adams to make sure that we can maximize out of them. The plan is that once we've done the renovations we are doing and put people back, we will be in a position to start disposing of those. And look at, for example, Mule Point is not 100% owned. It's not 100% owned by government. We own units. It's a shared, what do you call it? The sectional title arrangement. The idea is to fully own those and still keep that management arrangement. Because it keeps that flat very well, by the way. By the fact that it's good at maintaining and managing the shared units. And we've got to make use of that spread. That's my view. Is to effectively, I said to the team, and we've approached the management team there, the management of that flat, say, when there is anybody who wants to dispose, give the first option to public land, so that we can consolidate our accommodation in that area. We then will be able to do this the following. We'll probably look at how many of the ministers, deputy ministers, who don't want houses. Some of them have, as indicated, in Cape Town, we want just a flat to stay. The deputy minister, when we're trying to get a house, said, I don't want a house, I just want a shared accommodation flat, but it must be of a proper arrangement and standard that is required. So we want to consolidate in those kinds of areas, and then so that we can be able to do that. The strategy is to dispose of that, because for operational reasons, for demand, it's just not working very well for us. Even the deputy ministers we have allocated, I think there are two deputy ministers who are staying, who have been allocated houses there. They also complain about the extent to which that, if the traffic arrangements to the city centre are, even if you have blue lights, you can't just make it. Apparently in the morning it's just horrible coming from that environment. That is the reason why they're not unallocated. They may remain empty. I'm going to do a further work to check what the people do. But some teachers told me, I've got my clothes, I've got my... It's just a place where if all else fails, then I'll go there. And that tells me it's a demand, and a demand supply issue. We may have invested and bought flats in an area that is inappropriate for the place, not fitting the purpose. So we want to be able to acquire space within a certain problematic parameter. I mean, the DG of DCOP used to say to me, our meetings with the minister often in Cape Town sometimes end at 12 o'clock. Then you have to drive through to that place, sleep at 1. In the morning, you have to come to a parliamentary committee, portfolio committee, in the morning. Often, sometimes, there are also IMCs that are often arranged at about 7:30 by ministers. So that means you arrive at 1, sleep, and then to make that IMC, you've got to wake up and be on the road at 5. Because once you go for 6:30 or so, you're in trouble. That's the sort of thing that was that is causing that. Thank you very much. May I ask the caller, just look at which other ones I will need to respond to that.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the colleagues, Henderson and DDG Competences, will take the next lot, followed by the CFO.
Yeah. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, with regards to the EPOP questions, as at the end of January, the biggest underperforming province in terms of the incentive grant was the is actually Mpumalanga at 32%. And with regards to municipalities, incidentally, that was the Free State with 41%. So we are obviously working with them. The data captures have been appointed to capture data across all sectors of the EPLP. No, they have not been absorbed into the permanent establishment of public works. Chair, with regard to the NPOs, it's an open process where non-profit organizations submit applications to participate in the Expand Public Works program. I unfortunately don't have the breakdown with me, but I will send to the Secretariat a detailed breakdown of the NPOs across the provinces and the municipalities. With your permission, I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to touch on the question around the huge vacancy.
Will you kindly touch it with your microphone on?
It's on, Chair.
No,
it's not on, it's on.
It is on now.
It is, yes. It has been on. Thank you.
Hey, the people have changed the light bulb.
Yes. Thank you very much. Chair, let me thank the question from the Honourable Konapanat. With regards to the question, I was actually waiting for this question, because there is a report from Parliament in respect of performance of departments, also including us, and it has this huge vacancy rate of 73%, which in essence might mean that you've only employed 27% using that huge budget, which is obviously not possible. Now, DPSA had the same problem, because when they checked the personal data, that is what they viewed, and they wrote to us to say, DPW, what's wrong with you guys? Why do you have such a huge vacancy rate? And we wrote back to them and explained that because we split the budget allocation of PMTE from the main vote, DPW, but from an HR point of view, that exercise can only happen when we have started implementing the new organizational structure. So in other words, the HR processes are slower to follow the finance processes. Therefore, what then happens is that we then second, everybody is kept under the main vote, employed under the main vote, but then we then second the personnel to PMTE. So then so that PMTE can, we can then claim the money from PMTE because everybody is kept in it. So my suspicion is that they are reading both script and then combine it. So the same data then gets repeated twice, thrice, you know, many times, which is that 73% percentage. Now, once we begin to implement the new organizational structure, 1st of April this year, we'll then do a complete HR split because we're currently using the old structure as we speak. The current vacancy rate for the main vote is actually 9%. It's actually 9.2%. The total number of people employed is 1,363. Vacancies is 138 for the main vote, with a vacancy rate of 9%, 9.2%. For the PMTE, the total number of posts filled is 4,677. And the vacancies across the various branches, it's 942, which then gives them a vacancy rate of 16.07%. So that is then the true picture. In fact, you will also see the same picture when you look at our previous year's annual report. That is the picture. And it's kept from, it's a picture drawn from data from Vulindlela, you know, the government HR database. That is where we source this information, not only just from Parasan. So that is the actually true picture.
Just on the
issue that you have made mention as the actual correct picture. Mm-hmm. It would also be helpful if you send us the information as you have articulated it.
No
problem. Then it's much more clear.
We'll do that.
I've noted you, Kuala Banet, so that members can have the information in a clearer form, as you say. Honorable Kuala Banet?
Chair, I was just looking at those figures and adding them together. I think it's 23% odd. I can't
overall,
see...
Overall.
Yes, and I overall, but we were looking at a figure of 75. Now, where did that figure then come from? Even if, as you say, they've added the two together, it still doesn't come anywhere near that figure. So I'm still a bit confused where on earth they came up with it.
No, you're right, Honorable. We're also confused by it.
Oh.
Because it came from, that figure came from the Public Service Commission, actually. If you read their report to the National Assembly, that is the figure that they gave.
Huh.
But they shocked us as well. I'm saying, if you can check our budget allocation, and you check the number of people have explained, you split that up, you'll see that I'm correct. Because there's no way our budget can begin to relate to 27% employment rate, and we spend that much of our budget. I mean, the PMT alone, the compensation budget is about 1.3 billion. So there's no way from that 1.3 billion you can employ such a low number. It's actually 4,000, just on the PMT alone.
A final follow-up on this. May I ask if you've contacted them to ask where you've done? You're going to do that. I think it's a good idea. Just clear it up. Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, sir, and honorable members. The question was on the issue of the white paper, the causes of the delay. We did allude to the fact that the department doesn't have internal capacity to draft the white paper externally. But we have also explained that we will be insourcing various experts to come and draft the white paper according to identified thematic areas. And those thematic areas are program management, immovable asset management, public employment and skills development, construction and property sectors, regulatory environment, constitutional law to deal with the concurrent mandate of public works, and also construction design and project management. Under each thematic area, there are sub-layers that will be taken care of. On the issue of the review of the CIDP, the review is underway, Honorable Member. I'm not sure whether it did not come out very clear when it was presented. The draft act will be done by the end of this month. The issue of the BEP policy is captured as such, but we changed that to the review of the CBE Act. Now, in the APP, when you have made changes, you can't change it in terms of Treasury regulation. You have to write that which was approved by Parliament, but you must provide a narrative of any change. But the review of both acts is underway, and they can be presented in the next financial year. Oh, the timelines were presented them. I was here 3 weeks ago and I presented the timeline, but the detailed mapped process of those timelines, Chairperson, I think has been submitted to the researchers of the committee, so they can be accessed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
I will take the other questions that are related to finance.
May I suggest this before you take us through the answers to the finance? 15-minute break for tea and test drive, otherwise you are going to have it caught and accuse me of wasteful expenditure. So we'll be back at quarantine class.
I actually missed the question on the performance bonuses for executives. I'm sorry for that.
Okay.
We haven't paid any deputy director general bonuses as yet. The process has not been concluded as yet. We're currently busy with, on the SMS level, we're currently busy with the directors and the chief directors. We haven't as yet dealt with the bonuses for the executives. But for...
No. Leave your bonuses until after tea time.
Okay. Quarter or in the previous financial year. The current financial year, we haven't concluded the process. Thank you.
My question was actually senior managers. I don't know if senior managers are different to executive managers, perhaps. So the actual question was the total number of senior managers who receive performance bonuses and the cost. So is a senior manager considered to be a different?
No, you're right. In the public service, we regard senior management to start at salary level 13, which is equivalent to a director.
Got it.
So it's director, it's chief director, going to deputy director general, then to DG. So that would be what you call the senior management services, SMS.
Uh-huh.
That's what we regard them. For the financial year 2015-16, we have not paid any bonuses to senior management. 2013-14, those were behind our process. And the current process, there are quite few, but I would prefer that I don't talk off the cuff like that, but I provide information. Yeah, and submit it.
Thank you very much, sir. This that your topic on bonuses has put me in a very invidious position during my tea time, which was spoiled by members of parliament saying that there's talk about bonuses. They've not even had a raise. I'm not sure for how many years. So I said, unfortunately, that's a matter for the president. It's not for me. Shall we go to Chief Financial Officer?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Members, just responding to this, I think one or two questions that were related to myself. One was the issue around the under expenditure under Program 1 on the goods and services. The question was whether do you have problems with delivering problems with the service providers, and if they can't deliver, we must get rid of that or, you know, do something. I think the issue was not about delivery of the service providers, but the issue of timing, the time when we started the process of engaging them, going through a tender process as well as requesting the quotation. At times you've got to do back and forth on these things. You could have a tender that is not successful, you'll have to cancel it, start again. So that's just the time lag that has taken place, and not to do with the promise of delivery by the service providers. The next question was on slide, was the question on the presentation on consultants. I think we were just awaiting an invitation to do that. We'll do it as soon as we are invited by the portfolio committee to come and do the presentation on the spend of consultants and the use of consultants, and now we will be in a position to do that. Then there was a question on the inconsistencies or perceived inconsistencies in slide 43 and slide 45. They are not inconsistent because they measure different things. Slide 43, as correctly pointed out by the honorable member, is the percentages that you see there are the percentages of the total budget. So that's the one, which comes the 12% of the compensation, 6% of the goods and services, as a percentage of the total budget allocation of 11.8 billion rand. Slide 43, on the other hand, is calculate the percentage of current payments of the different elements that make up current payments. And that's why compensation would be 16.7 or 17% of current payments, which are sitting at 8.7. So it's 1469, which is sitting on slide 43, divided by 8784, as opposed to 11786, as we put it. I hope I've clarified that. So it's different percentages. The denominators are different. Thank you.
Thank you very much on that.
I've outlined the under-expenditure was as a result of. So the question was, Mr. Sorato raised a point that I may not have answered the question in totality of steps taken to deal with the under-expenditure of the goods and services. I've explained the under-expenditure being as a result of the time lag of the tender process. And now that we've concluded and finalized those tenders, we've placed the orders and the expenditure will start to accelerate. Just a slight one question that I've probably missed, what the allocation of the transfer to the parliamentary village was for. And it is not for the maintenance of the villages in terms of the houses and what happens in the houses from a maintenance perspective. It is for the transportation of the members to parliament, the buses that you are utilizing to and from. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to cover some gaps there, the policies for quarter four for prestige, it was one policy, the one we refer to for the residential accommodation for the executive. The four policies is an annual target, just to clarify that. Then, just to add to what the DG has said on the investigation of the renovation of prestige houses, we do have a proclamation in place for the SIU, and the SIU is conducting 15 investigations in 27 focus areas. What has happened is that the department has provided assistance to the SIU in the form of professionals from the department to quantify the extent of overbilling in the instance of providing repair and refurbishment services by the relevant construction companies. And what we see is a trend of professionals not applying the relevant diligence and professional conduct in carrying out their work and in certifying billing of construction companies. But I'm not able to say more, Chairperson. The SIU will issue their reports when they've concluded their assignment on the 15 projects. So far, only one summons has been issued on the 9th of December last year for an amount of 1.2 million. The other 14 are still outstanding. So we will watch the space and report to the committee when we know more. Thank you.
But the relevant professional councils, if the members are remiss in carrying out their responsibilities, what are they doing?
Chairperson, once we have the information in that regard, we will certainly work with the CBE and the BEPCs to ensure that these members are brought to book for unprofessional conduct and for breaching their very own code of conduct as professionals. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's Honorable Kola Banat who asked the questions about the prestige resolution of complaints.
Mm-hmm.
I think, firstly, the KPI is measuring to what extent are you, how many of the complaints have been done within a period. It's not saying how many of the complaints have been resolved. How many have been done within that period? Even if you've resolved it with outside of that period, we count the M&E process counts you outside of that. And it's an area, because it's about an efficiency KPI, if Ulwaz were to provide the explanation. Well, it's not one of those KPIs where you're saying how many apples have you produced. It's saying how many apples of good quality have you produced, and the quality standard is measured. And I think that is an area of concern, because what we want to do is to be able to reach a stage where we can say 100% of complaints are within the timelines that are stipulated, depending on what constraints are. That's one of the things we use when we engage and hire our facilities management contractors. We say, you locate somebody in Parliament. If there is a globe that needs to be fixed and a complaint is logged, you must respond within an hour, within a certain period. I'm just making an example. Those standards are listed in the contract. And then we measure to what extent have they been within those. And the low level of achievement is a concern which we are seeking to address, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Director General. I think with regard to slide 34, the issue of workshops, resuscitation of workshops, it's an issue that has been mentioned quite a few times. How many workshops are we speaking about getting up to speed, and what time frames are we looking at? It's not the first time that we have spoken around the issue of workshops. They are very important, so the sooner we have many of them up to speed, the better.
Chair, thanks. The Pretoria Regional Office workshop, the health and safety minimum standards upgrades have been completed. I think that was done about 2 years ago, so the facilities are ready. What we have deliberately done is we have said underpinning the maintenance strategy has to be issues of artisan and skills development in particular. And that is where we are pinning the success of the workshops and the strategy on the workshops. So the discussions that we are having currently with it's the Department of Labor? Labor, Higher Education, and so forth. We'll also be doing some site visits to skills development or artisan development centers that are specific to the work that we are doing. For instance, artisans that are specific to the mechanical work that of skills that we will be requiring. So we have taken a holistic approach, and we are really saying we will not be looking to be spending too much on the infrastructure side, other than the basic minimum requirements for health and safety standards in the workshop. So Pretoria and Cape Town, that is where we will be driving the people and skills development strategy. Thanks. We have already started. Thanks.
My issue is obviously to encourage a greater number of rollouts countrywide, you see, because in those trades and skills, that's where there's a dire shortage. Honorable Member Nelly Memasiela Pile, and then
sir, thank you very much. Under the highlights on number 15, Chair, that number 15, there is an issue of capacity building where they indicate that they are prioritizing to fill all the vacancies within 4 months. I just wanted to check what strategies do they have to ensure that those vacancies are filled. Because in most cases, we find that at the end of the day, they'll be saying those skills that we need are scarce and we could not be in the position to fill them as is expected. So what strategies have been done to ensure that even those that we say are scarce, at the end of the day, when we have to fill these positions, we are able to do so. Another issue that I wanted to take is on the issue of the stipend for those people who are working under EPWP. Recently we had a revision of the living wage by the NEDLAC, and what is the situation with the stipend which is supposed to be given to the EPWP workers? Is there anything that has been done?
relevant. The year Akbar Ma Adams was joined up. That was new up.
It is so unfortunate in the world, so I can. It's interesting that the weight of that opportunity can make and what can be the idea in the world, so I can. Thank you.
Honorable Adams is adding to the issue. She would like to know whether we are making provision for the disabled in the workshops, so we shouldn't forget our citizens who are disabled when we refurbish our workshops. Metapile me Mateve, and then I have noted you, Mekopan.
Thank you, Chair. On slide 26, number of buildings with service maintenance. I'm just concerned regarding houses that are all over the country which are belonging to the Department of Public Works. And I just wanted to know whether the department has future plans regarding those houses. These are dilapidated, and there's a security issue. Those are paid by the department. Do you have any future plans regarding those houses? The second one regarding the asset registration. Which mentioned that it has been finalized March 26th. It will be clear that a portfolio committee to be provided with that registration. The last one on state-owned accommodation, slide 42. Revenue collection. I've seen that we have collected the revenue only in our country. What about the houses abroad? Who's collecting revenue of a state accommodation abroad? Thank you.
Thank you, members. Again, I would like to encourage us rather in the committee. If we know about state properties in any province that are neglected or not occupied, I don't want us, particularly as this portfolio committee members, where possible, I would like us to give information so that the department can follow up. If we know that Khrobres, Dal, there's a complex where we have got houses or Mahuba's Kloof, identify them so that we can point them specifically to an area. I would appreciate that, members. Mwetapile Mekopan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my question is with regard to program for real estate management. According to the presentation on slide 32, the department indicated that in future they will be working with the estate agents. I would really appreciate if they can be specific when in future exactly will they be working with the estate agents, and what will be the term of reference? Would it be aligned with the new treasury regulations that will be in place from the 1st of April or not? My second question, Chair, is with regard to Program 5, Facilities Management. It is indicated, according to the presentation, that majority of the breakdowns are linked to the critical components, such as whatever, the lift, the heating, ventilation, and so on. And I just wanted to find out whether the department, are they outsourcing to do this type of job? If they are outsourcing, is there any skills transfer agreement from those company that are outsourced to transfer the skills to the department. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kola Barnett.
Thank you, Chair. As we've got the DG and the Deputy Minister here, I just have a quick question about legislation. I wanted to know if municipalities have the legal right to rework your national legislation and adapt it to suit themselves, as it were. I ask this because Ekurhuleni regulations are being changed so that if a company wins a tender to build a government building, they must hand 30% of that tender over to the ward, to people in the ward in which the building is being constructed. And if there's no one in that ward who's able to work on it, then Ekurhuleni will tell them who to give the 30% to. Now, companies spend huge amounts tendering and doing the work, and they have a very constructive, it's always local people who work with them. And I just find it strange that this is being allowed in terms of the national legislation, in that there doesn't seem to be anything in terms of the National Building Regulations and Standards Act. I know Treasury is putting something together about a centralized procurement office and officer. So I just find it very strange that this is happening, especially in light of the fact that there are all, you know, in KZN and up to Richards Bay and all over in the province and now creeping down to Eastern Cape, there are the invasions of construction sites. There's just been a multi-billion rand project that has simply been shut down on the beachfront because of the invasions of people demanding at the point of a gun, you will give me 40% of your tender and my people will do the work from tomorrow. So it's a huge criminal thing going on, but it seems to me the regulations are kowtowing to that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. The last point raised is obviously a very serious concern. And one wonders, it speaks very loudly to criminality.
Mm.
Where are the law enforcement agents? Then it means that everyone would be able to do as they please in this country. There will be no laws. So it's a very grave problem.
Chucking it like a hot potato all around the room. There
you go. Sure. I think the last point that was raised, the Honourable Chairperson, I think we are also relatively affected. I mean, by the issue of the demand for local labour. In our projects, and I think where we've got a solution in terms of dealing with it is the implementation of the social facilitation, particularly with the support of the IDT, where they are particularly strong in the area of social facilitation. I can only assume that in the instance of Ekurhuleni, reading the new treasury regulations that are about to be implemented, they actually give effect to an ability for the procuring organization to designate 30% to certain designated goods, which may include local. So I assume they are using that as a guideline in implementing. That's the one thing I can think about. When it comes to issues of
may I just interrupt you for a second there? I, for one, I'm ignorant about the particular regulation that you have referred to, the one that speaks to 30%. I think it would be wise if members of the portfolio committee can be provided with that regulation, reading matter on this.
Please.
So if these issues are raised, at least we have some semblance of knowledge about what this entails.
because in all likelihood, members, Kuala Banat came across it, somebody else might come across it, so that if we know what the regulation state or what the law is currently, that would be helpful.
First of all, the Honourable Kuala Banat asked, you know, what is our legislation, i.e. DPW? So this is not our legislation or regulation, okay. But basically, government in a number of sectors is saying that we wish to, and this is what's being driven by Treasury, which the CEO for the PMT has just referred to. Treasury is saying that there needs to be 30% set aside for SMME, okay, where this is feasible, obviously, where it wouldn't necessarily be feasible in all procurements, but public sector procurement for SMMEs, which may be white-owned for that matter, so it's about developing and diversifying and deconcentrating the heavy over-concentration oligopolistic structures, which is affecting the performance, affecting competition and so forth, and resulting in lots of collusion, not least in the construction sector. So there's this idea of which as Paul has said, is looking to 30%. What is absolutely illegal, okay, and problematic, is when a public body says, you must fulfill this, and we will select it is that you choose.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, if you don't fulfill it, these are the people that you've got to choose. It was a big problem with the PRASA procurement, where, in terms of the rolling stock, and it's proved to be now a problem, was that there was a big battle between Treasury and PRASA, and eventually I think PRASA half won the battle, and it designated who would be the BE partners of the of the original engineering manufacturers for the rolling stock, and I think some of the problems that we're seeing there are not unrelated to that. Just to say that where our minister has been involved, along with other ministers, in this settlement with the colluding construction sector companies in the 2010 and other related collusive activities, where part of the arrangement is that they will set aside part of their work to emerging black place and so forth. What we've been very meticulous about is they must choose their partners. It's not for the public sector, for the Department of Public Works or the minister or whatever, to enter into that space, because that's corrupt. You can't, and unfair as well. We need to set tough standards for them so that they begin to deconcentrate and we get around and there is the promotion of emerging construction companies and so forth. But we're under a lot of pressure from, for instance, the Black Business Council to say, as Paul will say, that they, as individuals, not representing black business, but representing themselves and their own gains, must become, and we're resisting that very strongly. But in the public space, you can see some of that, and I think that particularly PMTE is under those kinds of pressures to say, in the correct promotion of emerging companies and so on. That's correct. We need to do that. We need to encourage SMEs, etc. It's a structural problem in our economy that the SMEs are poorly developed. But at the same time, we must be absolutely rigorous in not, as it were, selecting our favorite, whether we're a municipality, a metro, in the case of Etiquini or not. So I think, and so, okay. As Paul has already onto the second dimension of it, the invasion of construction sites is a big problem. I've also seen some of the news reports referring to that, particularly in Etiquini. And clearly, that needs to be dealt with. And as Paul has correctly said, what we're obviously looking to really reinvigorate IDT, the Independent Development Trust. Call it something else because it shouldn't be independent and it's no longer a trust except legally. But because the community facilitation function is a critical one to ensure that the point that you were talking to me informally about, for instance, when it comes to the recruitment of EPWP participants in a local program, if there's a perception that jobs have been given to friends and family, those who are politically connected and so on, it results in this kind of, and correct, you know, understanding of. So the more transparent we are, the more rigorous we are in the way in which these things happen. But that doesn't on its own prevent criminality, which is sometimes the case, because one suspects that construction companies, contractors and so on themselves who are organizing these invasions sometimes. So that's a consultation, community facilitation, but at the same time, law and order when it comes to factional things. If I could then also just go on to the, if that's okay, Chairperson, the other question related to the National Minimum Wage Agreements, which have come through NEDLAC, and what is the situation with participants in the EPWP program. Okay. So the Minister and I were belatedly participants in the NEDLAC negotiations process, and we were brought in particularly because of a discussion going on around the status or otherwise of EPWP participants. And the position that government has taken, we have the support of the community sector, business is also supporting us. The trade unions are uncertain. Okay, so it's in the agreement, there's still further discussion to be had. The position of government is that the EPWP program must be excluded from the national minimum wage provision. Okay. First of all, just factually, we've done the statistic, and currently the minimum sectoral determination for EPWP community work and other participants in these programs is R83.59 a day, R83, which translates to R9.28 per hour. Okay. Now, this is not surplus in a private sector company where, you know, there's the workers versus the bosses as to how what surplus there is divided up. We're talking about a budgetary allocation, and we know the budgetary allocations are very tight in the current situation. So if we went to R20 an hour and therefore corresponded to the National Minimum Wage Agreement, we would lose about half of the 750,000 work opportunities, hopefully 100, a million work opportunities a year. Almost a half would be lost, okay? Out in the field as we speak now, something like 270,000 people are currently, as we speak on Tuesday, people are out in the country doing home-based care, ECD, cooking meals at schools, removing alien vegetation, doing fire breaks, fighting fire, etc. for new programs. Okay. Something like 10,000 of them would have to be withdrawn if we had to go to R20 an hour. Okay. So that's the first reason. But the second reason is that consistently government policy has been that we need to see, but basically we're dealing with people who are not on the labour market competing with other workers and therefore undermining other workers when it comes to wage levels. We're talking about people who are radically unemployed. Okay. And if it weren't for these programs, they would not be employed. So they're not on the labour market, but we need as best as possible to use these programs to create a pathway into the labour market, into employability or self-employment. And the figures are quite encouraging. So StatsSA has been, since 2011, monitoring what happens to participants in these programs. And something like, experience from year to year, but there's a consistent pattern, something like 65%. Either are make it into formal employment or into temporary informal employment, but some kind of employment, or set up an own business or a co-op, and then a further 11-12% are in further training. And so, but unfortunately 21% don't make it into those activities and go back into unemployment. So roughly that's the pattern every year. So what we're saying is this isn't employment in the full sense of the word, but it's a pathway, and we think on a fairly mass scale, okay, into the world of work. And we think that it's been relatively successful. The critical point is what we're saying to the unions, particularly at NEDLAC, is we agree with the unions that what we need is a discussion about how we move towards a comprehensive social security net. And the biggest gap in our social security net is the 6.9 million able-bodied South Africans who want to work and who are unemployed, just can't get work, okay. Willing sellers, but not finding willing buyers for their labor power. And if you're over 18 or under 60 and you're relatively able-bodied, you're not covered at all by the social grant system. Okay. So there's this huge gap. Now, it's so large that we can't fill it just with a public employment program, but we can make a contribution to filling it. Hopefully other things like localization, beneficiation, and reindustrialization, small business development, hundreds of other initiatives will bring down the unemployment rate. And hopefully if the unemployment rate comes down significantly, we will, with our 83 rand and, a day, be able then to cover the unemployed. So it will become a right to work thing. So that's the ambition for the program. Okay. So that was a bit long-winded, but just to hope to understand that so just as social grants aren't part of the national minimum wage, we think that there needs to be a sectoral determination for, and it goes up from year to year, it's basically CPIX related, and the Minister of Labour makes the sectoral determination on what the wage level is, the minimum wage level. Some participants get more than the 83 rand, but at least all participants must get at least 83 rand, 59 cents per day. And we need to see it as, you know, just as you wouldn't want social pensions to be determined by negotiations at NEDLAC, we need to get the spread as wide as possible and reach the maximum number of people who are disabled, who are pensioners and so forth, within the available budget. And the same with these programs. We need to think of them like that rather than as something subject to a national minimum wage. So that's the argument, and we think we have the support of most NEDLAC partners, including the unions who are engaging us for that perspective.
Thank you. Dr. Sirot.
Thanks, Chairman. Then there was a question on the critical component, and perhaps I'll respond by giving the Pretoria example in a bit more detail. So roughly a year ago, we did have, we were still having challenges with the lift portfolio. And one of the lessons, key lessons that we learned is that to make these lifts functional, you need to make sure that you catch up with, firstly, the upgrade, the backlog maintenance program of those lifts, and make sure that you keep to the scheduled maintenance program and so forth. So we benefited from best practice in terms of how to put in place a program management function. And what it really does, it starts by taking the entire population. So this is the skills that we have learned from engaging with the original equipment manufacturers. So it starts with making sure that you have the ability to know each and every lift that is in each and every building and what is the condition of that lift, where it is in terms of its program. When a lift stops to work, it should have the ability to report itself so that we get to the site as quickly as possible. Every single day, every single week, every single month, information is gathered So if I engage with the Pretoria Regional Office, for instance, the last dashboard that I saw will say to us, of the lift population, 16% is in need of major capital upgrade to ensure its continued functionality. So that's on the one hand. One of the other key opportunities that we have here is also linked to developing the artisan skills program. I think it's the Mayor's Heater that has a specific program that is a certificate program that deals with lift technologies, which we can start grooming and developing internally. So it's one of the things that we are looking at. We are also encouraged by the fact that the original equipment manufacturers cite South Africa as having the potential for a regional skills hub for their operations. So if you will know that you've got the major lift companies, I think it's your Otis, your Schindler, your Tennyson and so forth, which also introduces another element to say that in going out to the market to roll out to the rest of the region, we also need to be cognizant of the fact that we would also like to see the spread of skills across the sector as well in terms of the ability to do this kind of work. To that effect, we are busy. The lift strategy is done. We have done the pilot. We are now moving to say, let us send a request for information to the sector so that we get to know everybody that's manufacturing, everybody that's supporting, and then from there we will implement through an open RFP tender process, competitive process, to implement the program with all the lessons that we have learned, including the consideration for skills development, including the ability to centrally monitor and manage lifts as a critical component. Now, the reality is this is not just linked or limited to the lifts. It's limited. It goes to all the critical components that make any facility functional. And we have the view that if we get that right, the rest of the functional elements will also fall in place. The question asked around estate agents and the letting out and the details of the program, we tried to put out the advert, but there's also power to making sure that we engage with the local agents who are more familiar with the local terrain as far as these properties are concerned. So we have finalized the terms of reference and we will be sending the request for a panel of estate agents for the department who will assist us with not just this process, but a process at a later stage where we start to consider assets that are surplus to the state, which I touched on earlier. Now, on that point, the specific question was asked around what we are doing with the vacant properties and what is the plan. I think the starting point was always knowing and understanding the extent and inventory of these properties. Now, if you look at the number of properties we have, of the 92,500 odd properties that we have, 54% of those are specialized facilities. It's your prisons, it's your courts, and so forth, and police stations, etc. But the second largest segment of the facilities is residential properties. So off the top of my head, I think it's around 35,000-36,000 residential properties. Now, of course, in trying to establish what is core to our deliverable and what is non-core, we have started to unbundle that entire process and link it so that it talks specifically to what we should be doing. Now, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, there could have been a requirement to have houses in certain areas that we no longer require. And a lot of our clients are starting to indicate it either through courteous means of writing to us to say that we no longer require certain properties. But the reason we have vacant properties is because some of the user departments just pack up and leave the properties as is, and leave us with those vacancies. And that is why we are always reactive in trying to get to those properties. Now, that's the situation. So we have taken a cue from all of those signals and have said we need to unpack and zoom into the specifics that are non-core to us and present that for discussion as to what we then do. The cost of maintaining, the cost of security, the cost of rates and taxes and keeping these on our books relative to the benefit of perhaps looking to offload these assets. The question around the houses that are brought, these are effectively the domain and responsibility of International Relations Bureau. We would only get involved in the instance where the properties are no longer required and there is a need for us to give concurrence on the disposal of those properties. I don't recall us being in that situation of a disposal in recent times.
We are meeting with the DERCO. We had agreed to meet with them with regard to properties in Bonn, Namibia, to work out what would be the appropriate position with regard to those. I think the Bonn, remember the Germany after the collapse of the war changed the West Germany changed their. Is it East Germany? East Germany changed their West Germany. They changed their capital.
It wasn't the collapse of all the
the
Federal Republic of Germany as opposed to the Democratic.
There you go.
Their capital was in Bonn.
Yeah.
Hence our chancellery and so on was also located in Bonn.
Bonn, yeah.
Now Berlin is the capital of a reunified Germany.
So most of the departments, most of the countries that had their embassies and their buildings there, just packed up and left. I think the United States of America apparently just gave it to the employees. They do anything and everything, those people, the Americans, easy to do anything. Some countries, including South Africa, moved but left those vacant. And that is the discussions we are having for whether we should actually dispose of those properties. There were proposals for alternative use of those properties, but the reality is that time has elapsed. That effectively means that we may. DERCO is paying, because this was devolved to DERCO. They are paying for maintenance, upkeep, and rates and taxes and all of those things. And in fact, some are becoming a source of embarrassment if they're not maintained properly. And that is what we're discussing. I think in 2 weeks' time, Peter should have told you, we are having a discussion with them on all of that portfolio, so that we can then indicate which ones we concur for disposal.
Yeah.
And because we need a full assessment of what is it that is the cost and everything, and whether there's no other requirement from other departments for those properties. So maybe later we can be able to give progress to the committee.
And the Namibian situation should explain politically as well. It was a fall of another wall. Which is
Southwest
Africa.
Yeah. I think it's almost a similar thing with the Namibian. There were proposals from us with the Namibians whether we shouldn't give it to the Namibian government and all of those. And that is what we will be discussing with them. And therefore process it through the correct channel. After proper assessment and determination of what is required. I think there are the one or two other African countries. And some garage in London, some strange reason. There's a garage in London that is very valuable.
I've heard about it. Yeah.
And property
I think
in
you
Iran.
Can give it to the committee.
In Iran or Iraq, that is a source of a problem for their cause, qualification of their financial statements, etc. Those are the things we'll be discussing.
Thanks, DJ. I think. Just two other quick items. I think the contribution that relates to accessibility and for the disabled, and also incorporating that into the workshops is a very powerful contribution, which we will make sure is specifically dealt with in the strategy. I really appreciate that, because we do have a program, and a budget for the capital spend. Now, to incorporate the two is actually a very good contribution. The last point is around the asset register. I think we were scheduled to have a briefing on the asset register with the committee, and I think we are still ready to come and provide that briefing with any information that is required. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sirote. Moran.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also express thanks to the question by the Honourable Member Sihela with regard to how we were able to maintain recruitment within the prescribed period. The legislated period from the DPSA is actually 6 months. And the reason why we're moving to 4 months was because of the earlier discussion with the Honourable Kola Banat around the huge vacancy rate.
Yeah.
And as a result, we had to put measures in place to begin to see how best we can fast-track in reducing our vacancy rate. To that extent, therefore, our recruitment strategy is based on, in the first instance, the Public Service Act and the Public Service Regulation and the various directives from both the Public Service Commission and the DPSA. And we then use those pieces of prescripts to source expertise either through secondment or through appointment additional to the establishment or contract appointment or even direct filling of vacancies via advert at the one level. And the DG, for instance, becomes the standing chairperson for your chief director position. So in that case, there is stability and certainty in that regard. Then the challenge might be, to a greater extent, the director one, the levels, because then it becomes different branch managers. But the recruitment strategy makes it easy because we identified priority. That's why even in the APP, you'll see, we speak of priority. We don't speak wholesale. We speak of priority positions, which are informed by various factors. One of those would be the Minister's policy statement. You can see, these are the areas of focus for this financial year. Then that's what then will buttress the recruitment strategy. It's for us to be able to do that. But the other mechanism that we have used to deal with that scarcity, which may not necessarily be related to the period, that 4 month period and so on, but more to increase our pool of expertise within the department, is that being confronted with the challenge of not sufficient number of expertise, especially the technical professional side of things, but also not being able to compete with the private sector. We've then either targeted retired technical professionals who we will then invite to make themselves available for recruitment within the department. In the previous financial year, we recruited about 22 of those in various categories of expertise and competencies. But also, the portfolio committee will remember that we also, as a department, have an in-house program of young professionals where we recruit and train young people who have specialized in math and science, but also who might have done qualification, for instance, engineering qualification and so on. We then recruit them into that program to conclude their mentoring and training in a workplace environment. And once they've completed their qualification, we then absorb them. So those are the mechanisms that we utilize. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Member Sela and Sobato, which is...
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I don't want to ask another question, but I just wanted to say, when I was talking about the EPWP incentive or a stipend, it could not be the same as the ones that are fully employed or permanently employed. But I was just saying, are we not looking at increasing it a bit from what it is now? Maybe pushing it to 100 rand per day or something like that. because to me it is still too low as it is, especially that we have revised the rest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any immediate response?
Okay, just on that, but DDG Henderson can also assist. Basically, it's not us that determines, it's set by a sectoral determination by the Minister of Labour, basically. And it does increase, and I think it's annually. And it's basically related to an inflation increase. Okay. But what does happen is that, particularly in programs where people are in the program for years, for instance, in the case of the Working on Fire program, to use that example, basically there, within the program itself, there is an escalation according to experience and time on the program and sort of skill development and so on. So the 83 Rand is the current central minimum. So, yeah. But it's not us that makes the determination, it's the Minister of Labour. And clearly, if we could make it more, we'd like it to make it more, but at the same time, we want to reach as many of the unemployed as possible, so we're juggling those two challenges.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I see no further requests, indications for the pleasure of articulating your voices. So I would like to thank the Deputy Minister, Director General, and all the officials who have come to join us today. There are those officials, we haven't heard your voices, but I'm sure we'll make a plan to hear your voices next time so that you don't feel that just came along with the others without getting the opportunity of sharing your experience and your knowledge with us. But we do appreciate your presence, and we look forward to future engagement with all of you. Thank you very much, good folks.
Thank you.